News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning, y'all. It is nearly 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5, Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com. I wish I had my own website like that.
You can. There's a way to do that.
It's very confusing. Also, the Washington Examiner, Quinn wearing a couple of hats with that organization, so we're going to let him get out of here a little bit sooner this morning. Quinn, thanks for making time for us this morning.
Glad to be on with you guys. Thanks.
So, Quinn, let's talk about some local news. I'll start that way. And big news as we all wait on the project that we've all been waiting for, the I-10 Mobile River Bridge and Bayway project. And there's been some up and downs over the last year. How are we going to get this funding? How have costs gone so much through the roof after they had projected earlier costs years ago? But a big lifeline from $550 million federal, $550 million from the feds. And Katie Britt played a big role in bringing that down here.
Yeah, and look, this news came out actually a couple of weeks ago, and there's been so much going on nationally that I haven't gotten to mention it. So I just want to say this. I moved to Mobile in 1998, and the Transportation Department had already done a draft environmental impact statement for this project. In other words, 26 years ago, they had the project in mind, and they had already done one of the biggest, or at least the draft of one of the biggest parts of it, which is the EIS, and yet it has taken 26 years. It's been an absolute disaster of, you know, lots of fault to go around for 26 years. And the fact that they now have this huge federal grant is immense, and it's something we've been looking for 26 years, is something of this size to really jumpstart it. So I just want to give credit in a couple of places. Number one, first of all, Bradley Byrne, when he was congressman and got in there in 2014, basically jumpstarted a dead project because so much had gone wrong that this was basically dead. He got it jumpstarted. Then lots of local people, and I can't name them all, you know, have worked on it over the years. And then you're absolutely right. A coalition led by Katie Britt, Jerry Carl played a role, and hats off to him too, but got something that even Katie Britt's former boss, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, or in some cases the ranking member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, couldn't get, which is something this large. Richard Shelby had gotten $125 million, I think it was, for the project. Katie Britt has now gotten us a $550 million grant, and that is huge. And I just want the listeners to understand what a big deal it is, especially after 26 years of spinning our wheels, and give credit to everybody, you know, Mayor, Congressman Carl, et cetera, but especially Katie Britt for spearheading this. This is a great thing for Mobile.
Was Katie Britt able to get that money because she's really cute?
No. First of all, the money was there because of the infrastructure bill, which most conservatives thought was too big. But it was there. But still, there was no indication for the first year or two after that bill passed that Mobile had a shot at it. And Katie Britt is on the Appropriations Committee, plus she worked for Shelby when he was chairing the Appropriations Committee. She knows how the system works, and she put her nose to the grindstone and got it done. So we've got lots of other things to talk about, but I just want to give credit where it's due. It's a wonderful thing to get this project really moving.
All right, Quinn, let's talk about the big weekend news, and that is, of course, Sunday. Joe Biden says, I'm out. Not out as president. He'll serve through the rest of the term, but out of the campaign, and endorsed Kamala Harris. I'm not sure how many people saw that coming or wanted that to happen in the Democrat circles. But I think my favorite memes from this week online have all been how you know, us that follow college and pro football, really any sports, you see the writing on a wall, on the wall, mm-hmm. when someone's saying, I'm not getting out, I'm not leaving, and everyone else is saying, yeah, you are, you're done. And so we all knew after watching so many college football coaching searches that Biden was probably going to step out, but he's going to coach the bowl game. He's just not returning next season, Quinn. Your thoughts on him withdrawing from the race?
Okay, first of all, I've got to give credit to you for that analogy. That's very good. Well, well done, Dalton. This was too long in coming, and spare me all the stuff about how this shows what a great and selfless American President Biden is.
I'm with you there, yeah.
He should never, ever have had the effrontery to ask for four more years and to ask to serve to age 86 when, you know, this is a man who 36 years old almost died from a double brain aneurysm. It's not his fault, but he is a sort of reasonably old 81 right now, and to ask to serve to 86 would have been basically obnoxious, and especially when he was showing signs of decline. And then all the people around him, all not just his family, but the people that worked with him that tried to hide from the American public what we could still see with our plain eyes anyway, tried to lie to us, say that he was fit to serve, not just till the end of the term, but until 2028. That what they did was a crime against the political system, and I speak figuratively speaking, but it was absolutely inexcusable, and so this took way too long to happen.
One of those people that did the hiding of Biden is now running for president of the United States. So, you know, a couple of things there. She doesn't seem very qualified at all for a position like this. Number two, she was guilty of what you just talked about.
Yeah, and she was way out front saying, oh, I work with him every day, and he's vigorous, and he's fine. She lied to us. Then again, you know, that's sort of what she does. You're right. She does not have a very good record. She started her career with an appointment from her illicit boyfriend. She then got promoted first by appointments, then by winning elections that were not heavily contested except on her own party side. Then she barely, she won not very convincingly, and I'm getting the two elections mixed up, to state attorney general and then to U.S. senator, but basically didn't win by much in an overwhelmingly Democratic year. So she sort of had an easy path. She got to the Senate and accomplished nothing except literally producing in one of those years the single most left-wing record in the Senate. I'm not talking about a conservative group, one of these outside nonpartisan groups that sort of ranks these things. 2019, she was further to the left than socialist Bernie Sanders. She was further to the left than what's her name, Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. She was further to the left than all of them. She is a radical's radical, and she was chosen as vice president only because Biden backed himself into the corner of saying he wanted, you know, two parts of an identity. He had to have a woman, and he had to have a black woman.
Right.
And so she has no business being president. She has been an embarrassment as vice president, and it's another insult to the American public for everybody on the Democratic side, except Barack Obama, oddly enough, to rally around and say, we're going to shove her down her throats when nobody has voted for her. Let me say this one last thing, and I know I'm sort of filibustered. What the Democratic leaders are doing by not having an open, transparent convention, James Carville, the Raging Cajun, called for an open, transparent process. They're not having one. They are shoving her down America's throats. They are anointing her when they have a system in place, they have delegates elected for the purpose, and they're not even giving those delegates a choice. That is undemocratic.
Yeah, and you mentioned that President Obama hasn't endorsed her yet, and it seems to me just from even before Biden dropped out and kind of the news stories that were leaking out from different camps, that if I had to guess, I think Obama would be one who wanted the open primary, just from where these sources seem to be coming from. It's, Quinn, and this has been mentioned time and time again, but Democrats have been talking about protecting democracy and every vote counts. And then for Kamala to become the nominee without getting as much as a single vote, that seems to run counter to their entire game plan over the last 8 years.
Completely counter. Now, there have been a lot of young conservatives I know who really don't understand the convention process anymore. I mean, this is, if it's not democracy 101, it's constitutional American democracy 201. It's still sort of low level. It is not a problem to pull somebody who is ill off the top of the ticket. That's not what's anti-democratic. I mean, if he can't run, he can't run. But the democratic process, as it has developed over the years, has created this process where the parties have a convention, and they don't do it by electronics. They don't do it by AI. They elect delegates, just like we elect representatives to Congress. The process is to elect delegates to make a decision when the convention time comes so they can take into account developments such as Joe Biden's increasing problems. The democratic process is those delegates should have a choice. What's undemocratic is not giving them a choice at all. They represent the primary voters that voted for them, and now the party is saying, okay, we're all going to rally around Kamala Harris and not let you have any other option. That's wrong.
And you wonder with the way they lined these things up with the early debate for Biden on CNN, the Republican National Convention that followed, and Gardner with a great question here. Yeah, I wonder how much of that was maybe not the plan, but part of a plan B or something like that, that, oh, if Biden bombs in this debate, if he continues down this downhill path for his health, that will replace him, but maybe wait until after the Republican National Convention, after this debate, where Trump's already chosen his VP. He's already spent a lot of his campaign talking about Biden specifically. Do you think that worked its way into their thinking at all?
Oh, I do. And you, I think you all said that. I said that. As soon as that debate was announced for so early in the campaign season, almost everybody was saying, there's something up here, something is weird. And I think it was. I don't think they deliberately were doing it to push him out of the race. I think they were deliberately doing it to give themselves a chance to pull him out of the race if in fact he bombed the way that they feared that he would, and which he obviously did.
John has a question for you. Who do you think will be her vice president pick, if you had to predict?
Boy, if I had to predict, I'd say she ends up going with Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. It's a crucial state for the Democrats to win. Plus, Shapiro has a more moderate image than most of the others, and certainly a more moderate demeanor. And she's so radical that she needs to try to reassure the middle. My prediction is Josh Shapiro.
One more quick question. I know you got to go, but Netanyahu comes to Capitol Hill. How do the Democrats keep from losing their wigs over all this?
That's a good question. I mean, you may or you may not like Netanyahu, but the fact is that he has actually been a very good friend to the United States in multiple ways for decades and decades, and now he's the elected leader of a close ally. He should be welcomed with open arms and listened to, and not, certainly not, treated like a pariah.
We're going to see if that happens that way with Democrats so divided on that issue. Quinn, thank you for your time today. We appreciate you for coming on with us on this Tuesday.
Thanks a lot.
You got it.
All right, Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, The Washington Examiner. That's where you can read his work. And send us some texts, phone calls, 251-343-0106. We'll turn up your voice for the rest of the hour. We'll also get into that disastrous hearing yesterday with the Secret Service Director in front of the House Oversight Committee. That's on the way on Mobile Mornings. 825 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings on a Tuesday. This segment brought to you by the great folks at Tobias & Comer Law, the local personal injury law firm that's helped get fair compensation for a ton of people in our area. And they've been doing it for decades from their office down on Dauphin Street. And Desi, Brian, Lacey, they all clearly care about our community. It's because they're a major part of our community. And you could tell from all of the tips on safety that they give every month when we talk on Law 251, our podcast, which you can find at fmtalk1065.com. This week, though, Operation Backpack. Help Tobias & Comer Law fill backpacks for students in need. And you have until July 26th, so that's Friday, to drop off school supplies at the Tobias & Comer office to provide for area children in need. You can drop off these filled backpacks with things that students would need for the school year. From 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., you could drop it off at their office at 1203 Dauphin Street in Mobile. Also, a drop-off location at Fox 10 Studios on Satchel Page Drive. From car to boating accidents, defective products to workplace accidents and maritime injuries, Tobias & Comer Law has seen it all. Their website's great, tobiascomerlaw.com. You'll also find the phone number there for a free consultation any time of the day, 251-432-5001, tobiascomerlaw.com.
The text line has been hopping this morning and a little interesting, too, at times.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but, it's always a good morning when you start getting threats. So it's fun. Fun times. But, yeah, we signed up for it here. Cheese Wagon text traffic update. Disabled vehicle I-10 eastbound. That looks to be on the Bayway. Disabled vehicle I-10 eastbound right shoulder of the Bayway. That's right. So I-10 eastbound right shoulder of the Bayway. Maybe you want to get left in the left lane if you're headed eastbound. Derek says, just a reminder that over a dozen IDF agents were arrested on 9/11. Video of them videoing the planes as they crashed into buildings. Video of them cheering. Great friends. Easily provable with a simple search. Bill says, I'm an ALDOT retiree who conducted the very first public hearing for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge back in 1998. Oh, Bill, we need to get you on the line. People almost laughed us out of the room when we showed the traffic projections indicating the Wallace Tunnels would be at capacity for traffic within the next 10 years. Yeah, I'd say they reached capacity at some point over the last couple decades, right?
Laughed them out of the room. With that in 1998. Is that amazing?
Yeah. What would the price? And maybe there were, Bill, if you remember, or if you have any receipts from those days, did we have any projected prices for the bridge project back then? I would love to see what they estimated the cost back in 1998 for rebuilding.
You would fall out.
I bet it's amazing. Texter here says said they heard a news report here that Obama got behind Kamala Harris yesterday. Nope, Obama still has not endorsed Harris. He's one of the last holdouts. Now remember, he didn't endorse Biden during the 2020 election. Until
the end.
Until he had completely wrapped up the nomination. He says his reasoning behind doing that is that he's like the party elder and he doesn't want to show any favoritism until it's definitely in the bag, right?
And so, plus, he didn't say this, but on some level, he hates Biden's guts.
Yes, yeah, we've seen some stories about that. And I think it works the other way, too. I don't think Biden...
Yeah.
Wow. But, with Harris now the nominee, I've got to tell you, I think Trump had a much better chance against Biden. And while they're polling around the same, or Biden was even polling better than Harris, according to a lot of these last polls, big problem. She could put sentences together. And they put all of their money and all their effort into boosting her as the candidate. This could be some trouble, I think.
Well, she can, but she's going to have to be on her A-plus game for about four straight months. I don't know if she's capable of that.
Hmm.
It's Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835. Mobile Mornings on your Tuesday. Shannon Hesse with Wise Living Real Estate joins us again tomorrow at 7:15 for her tips on real estate. And So if you're in the market or thinking about getting in the market, make sure you join us at that time. 251-343-0106. We can turn up your voice or you can text us if you like as well.
Yeah, and yesterday, after we got off the air here for Mobile Mornings, then the fun began, right? Over on the different news channels as the Secret Service Director, Kimberly Cheadle, for the first time before a congressional committee. And it was Jamie Comer's House Oversight Committee that she sat before and answered or did not answer questions yesterday. Comer's been getting all of the good stuff, hasn't he, over the last 2 or 3 years. They've had some very important hearings.
They have. I don't recall one as one-sided as yesterday, at least what we saw. And then listening to the clips overnight and this morning, it's kind of like she just stonewalled them. But at the same time, that didn't look good on her.
Yeah, and everyone's saying she was unprepared. Maybe
she's uncooperative. Maybe
uncooperative. I think maybe she just went in there with the intention to thumb her nose at every question. And who directed her to do that? I don't know. Or maybe it was just her decision. I think Doesn't Have Meta had a text earlier that, if I can go back to it, he said, let's see here. He basically said, okay, here you go. DEI hires have been trained not to resign no matter how bad it gets. They are brainwashed to believe they're not at fault for their actions. Now, I don't know if that fits the case exactly here, but she clearly believed, even though she took full responsibility, her answers didn't really give that indication, right? And you dealt with it with the kids. I'm dealing with it now with kids. They can say they're sorry, but it doesn't mean they're sorry. They can take responsibility without actually taking responsibility. And it becomes apparent once you actually start asking questions how sorry someone is for a pathetic thing they'd done.
Yeah.
And Secret Service, complete failure here, and she's kind of passing the buck, but passing it to no one in particular.
She's been pathetic twice. She was pathetic on the day of, or well, I'd say twice. But if that's the way that the Secret Service is being run under her, then you can only imagine, like, one of the congressmen was asking, how does a loner, a kid who's a nobody, 20 years old, pretty much like a loser, gain this access to shoot at the former president? And we always thought when you heard the word Secret Service, that was something very special, just like FBI in the day, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like that meant something.
Yeah. Well,
Secret Service, Navy SEAL, best of the best. Well, they weren't that. And so you just wonder how she is running that organization, and if she's not lucky that this isn't the first time that their incompetence bit her.
Right. And by the way, Lone Wolf, yeah, that's what he's been called. He had these devices that were encrypted, or he was using encrypted apps. I think he had multiple devices. There's kind of a separate investigation going on. It's the Heritage Foundation, which has been talked about a lot over these last few weeks. And they've been using ad tracking, I guess, to figure out where the phones that came into the crook's household where they'd been previously. We'll wait to see what comes from this and how much of that can be corroborated through this separate investigation. Because, you know, I love that Comer's looking into this. I love that so many politicians, even including Democrats yesterday, seem to be very upset with how things have been handled under her care there with the Secret Service. But I would feel much better if there was a separate independent investigation, and preferably from trustworthy people, that looks into this shooter's past and also how this could happen under the Secret Service's direction here. But yesterday, I mean, the word of the day was deflection or stonewalling.
I don't want to speak to specifics of the event. Again, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the numbers of personnel that we had there. I don't have the details on the timeline. I'm unable to answer details of exactly how the individual accessed the roof.
And while Democrats did, several of them, take the conversation more towards gun control rather than how could Secret Service let a shooter 130, 150 yards away from the former president. Democrats did turn on her quite a bit yesterday. At the end of it, by the end of the day, and maybe this number has grown since then, you had 15 lawmakers, 12 of them Republicans, 3 of them Democrats, suggesting that Cheadle should resign or be fired. That included Comer, the chairman of the committee, and also Jamie Raskin, who is the top Democrat on that committee.
I will be joining the chairman in calling for the resignation of the director.
AOC called it unacceptable.
This is not theater. This is not about jockeying. So the idea that a report will be finalized in 60 days is simply not acceptable.
And another Democrat, California's Ro Khanna, tricked her, I guess. I don't know if he was trying to trick her.
Yep.
And he referenced the Reagan assassination attempt back in 1981. The Secret Service director at the time, Stuart Knight, resigned after that failure.
Do you know what Stuart Knight did when he was in charge at the time of the Secret Service? Do you know what he did afterwards?
He remained on duty.
He resigned. He resigned.
Like you said earlier, she walked into that very confidently. She had the 50-50 shot of getting it right, and she did not get it right, and that was complete egg on her face.
She swung and missed on that one. Yeah. Some of the questions she declined to answer: how many agents were protecting Trump when a gunman shot at him, when the gunman shot at him? Who decided to leave a nearby rooftop out of the event's security perimeter? She didn't tell members of the committee why Secret Service agents weren't aware until the last seconds that people in the crowd had seen a gunman on that roof. And that's before you get into the fact that Secret Service had spotted this person way earlier than the shots were fired. She also declined to answer more minor questions. How many times did the gunman fire? How did Crooks get his rifle on the roof? She also didn't answer whether there was a second shooter. And you wonder how conspiracies grow.
Yeah.
She didn't answer it.
I know.
She said those kinds of questions should be directed to the FBI, which is handling the criminal investigation. Nancy Mace, I thought, tore her up pretty good, the Republican from South Carolina. She used some curse words in there, which I don't know if that helped or hurt her case, because I thought she was doing a pretty good job litigating Cheadle's failure, even without the curse words.
Didn't she say you're full of blank?
Yeah, she said BS and you're full of blank.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, Texas Congressman Fallon, is it Pat Fallon, I think is his name? Pat Fallon. He had a really strong five-minute question and answer segment with the Secret Service director. I wish I could play the whole thing. We'll play this. He gets pretty heated here towards the end of it. Let's see. And play. Maybe it's not wanting to cooperate with me today. So Fallon, he's lining this thing up, and he's asking her how... Well, he's asking her all the same questions that we have been asking.
I mean, he was really grilling her. He really had her on the ropes.
We might have to come back to this Fallon thing later as he asked Cheadle the questions, because it appears we're having some internet issues. But, yeah, we'll get to this. All right, here is Fallon yesterday. And it's not going to work. And I'm going to stop holding everyone up because we're having Fallon issues. But we do have a caller on the line. And let's go to that call right now. Caller, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing good.
Good. Who are we speaking with?
This is Joel from Somerdale.
Hey, Joel, what's your thoughts?
Hey, well, you know, that infrastructure bill is all good, great and dandy. They did a breakdown on that. Mobile got a drop in the dime. You should see the money, amount of money that's going to the blue states for bridges. I mean, it's just astronomical, the amount of money. I mean, yeah, Katie did good. At least we got that, but... Man, that money is being transferred to blue states, y'all.
Yeah,
I mean, they did a breakdown on it, and it's ridiculous. We shouldn't be that bridge should be paid for.
And Joel, when
it's going to get paid for, there's going to be a toll on it.
Yeah, when folks started going after the Republicans who were excited that money was coming down, and they said, well, how can you vote against the infrastructure bill and then be excited about this? Yeah, I did the math on a calculator back then. That $550 million coming to the bridge, which is a major infrastructure project for the nation, makes up about 0.0004% of the infrastructure bill.
Yeah,
I drive a big truck every day for a living, so I go back and forth twice a day off that bridge, that interstate. The amount of Texas, California, I mean, Nevada, I mean, Louisiana, Alabama's just got a small part of this going across that bridge every day. I mean, the traveling of cars back and forth from Florida to, I mean, you know, Florida's a major destination tourist area.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people that go on vacation at those theme parks and beaches and stuff over there. But and then, you know, I wanted to comment real quick, like on the Trump assassination.
Mm-hmm.
There's already been congressmen that's done went on top of the roof
right.
of this building.
Yeah.
And if y'all don't think that this government, this agency, did not allow that man to shoot at him, everybody's looking the other way. They knew he was up there. They knew, but they played it off. and they hoped that he got a shot, and he did, and it missed his target. I guarantee you that's why she's so defiant, and it's just her attitude. Oh, my God.
Well,
y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Joel. And, yeah, that congressman he's talking about, Representative Eli Crane, and I tweeted these videos. I retweeted them, x.com/Dalton Orwig. He went up on that roof. He went to the building that was right next to the roof where they said they had Secret Service agents stationed. And in that second floor, you get a full view of the roof that Crooks had climbed on. Mm. So,
I thought they were in the building itself that he climbed on.
I think they were in both, but Crane said they were in this video that was right next to it, and in this building that was right next to it. And obviously, the whole part about the slope roof, no one believed that when it came out of her mouth to start with. And he stood up there. He said, "There's a 70-year-old man standing right here. Like we've." Everyone can stand on this. It's not that dangerous.
Yeah.
And so, Crane, yeah, check those videos out. Let's see if this is working now. Here's Fallon yesterday.
I recall that statement.
Okay. Does the Secret Service have written policy you can share with us about slope roofs?
No.
Okay. So why'd you act like there was one? Because is it your practice to comment on enormous events of enormous national implications when you're ignorant of the facts? That's rhetorical. So here's this thing with the slopes. You go all up to like 1812. You can go to a 112, which is about as flat as you can get without it being completely flat. And you're saying that there was a danger, safety concern there. But the problem is, Director, you put your counter snipers on a 312 roof, which is steeper than the 112. And by the way, the 112 is ADA compliant. You can build a ramp for a wheelchair on a 112 roof. So these are nothing but pathetic excuses, and they make no sense, and they're a bunch of cow dung. All the law enforcement I've spoken with over the last 9 days are amazed that the AGR rooftop was not secure. And you want to know why? Because it's dangerous. I have never had any long gun training in my life. I own an AR-15, and last time I shot it one time my whole life. It was 6 years ago. That is until Saturday, where we recreated the events in Savoy, Texas. We recreated what happened in Butler. I was lying prone on a slope roof at 130 yards at 6:30 at night. And I knew that he had a scope, I didn't know what kind, red dot or magnified. So I shot 8 rounds from both. You know what the result was? 15 out of 16 kill shots. And the one I missed would have hit the president's ear. That's a 94% success rate. And that shooter was a better shot than me. It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed. Corey, compared, Torrey's life is over because that damn shooter made it on the roof. And it wasn't the roof that was dangerous. It was a nut job on top of the roof. You know what else is dangerous? I believe your horrifying ineptitude and your lack of skilled leadership is a disgrace. Your obfuscating today is shameful. And you should be fired immediately and go back to Garden Doritos. Mr. Chairman, I yield.
So that was some of the strongest from a member of the committee yesterday.
You know, I noticed from that, too, is those who interrogated her or questioned her later in the hearing, they were really fed up because they were watching everything that went on with all the other people lobbing the questions at her. Like, hey, mm-hmm. They watched this attitude. They watched this arrogance, I guess. They watched this defiance. And by the time it got around to them, they were now going to get a chance to ask the questions. They were highly emotional because of what they just witnessed in that room.
Yeah.
They're emotional enough from what happened in Pennsylvania that day. They walked in motivated to try and get to the bottom of it. And then when they saw
how defiant she was,
we're not getting anywhere with this lady. So at least I'm going to make sure she's got a piece of my mind. And it was interesting. And it was, I don't know how you defend anything that this woman has done in terms of her representation of the Secret Service, the actions of the Secret Service on the ground that day and the rooftops. Mm-hmm. And of course, her testimony or whatever you want to call it yesterday, which was almost non-existent. Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. You'd think she would have come in with at least something to say, right?
Nothing. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, and that text line 251-343-0106. If you want to shoot us a text, many of you have already this morning. We appreciate that. Also, the Jeff Poore Show is on the way. We'll let you know what he's got lined up straight ahead. Good morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:54. Got a new poll that shows 33% of Americans say they believe they have an idea that could make them wealthy. Like they've got this thing in the You're looking at me like you don't think that's a good idea. But anyway, they say they kind of 19% say they feel it in their bones.
Yeah.
Their idea, either their idea, it could be a movie script, it could be an invention, it could be something like that. Or it could be that they think they're going to win the lottery.
Yes.
They're hopeful about that.
I think that's a good thing.
You have to
believe it in your bones to make it work, to make it happen.
Then you're only totally devastated and disappointed at the very end of your life when you realize it never happened. So say then you're 81. Well, like, let's pick an age, like 81, like, I don't know, Joe Biden. And you're 81 and now you're like, it's all passed me by. Of course, you know, that's not been the case for the Biden family, but I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a whole lot. At least you do. I agree with that, actually. To have the hope of something.
Yeah.
The hope of you're going to succeed in this way today. A positive outlook on on sales, or a positive outlook on your program.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think negativity attracts negativity.
Yeah.
Or negative things.
Yeah.
Positivity attracts positive things.
Yeah.
So, I think I will win the lottery. I really do.
Well, you're not alone.
I'll need to start entering if I want to win it. But and once I do.
Do you think it's more guys or women who have this positive outlook?
Oh, man. Probably men in general.
Yep.
I think that's most likely.
39% of men feel confident that they'll strike it rich someday. Mm-hmm. And 26% of women who are the realists in this conversation.
The worst is, if you bet on sports and you pick a team to win the championship, or you pick a golfer to win a major tournament, you know, you can do parlays and you pick several different teams.
Yep.
And so you have a year-round sweat, they call it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And once, like, the year that the Braves won the World Series, I had a parlay. And
21?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But I had Tiger winning... Let's see. I had the Braves winning the Braves winning the World Series. I had one other one. And I think I had Tiger Woods winning the Masters. And if I remember correctly, the Braves won. So
yep.
I'm like, well, I'm a third of the way there. And then everything fell apart after
okay.
that. But yeah, I had belief. It didn't help me much there.
Yeah, parlays are, you can win more with a parlay, obviously,
that's right?
Right?
Yeah.
Because you have to have a series of things go just your way.
And the sports books love them
yep.
because they take all of your money.
Yeah.
When you do that. That's how
yeah.
that works out. Ed said, morning, Dan and Dalton, your thoughts on AL2 now that Biden is out. I think it changes things. And I think it changes things in a lot of races nationally. There were a lot of people who I don't think were going to go out and vote for Biden because of everything they'd seen in these last few weeks.
Yeah, I would say this does not help Dobson in AL2.
No, I don't think it does. Todd Stacey yesterday on Sean's show, Midday Mobile, said just as much. Joel says, because he was allowed to shoot at the president, why does everybody miss this point? Another texter, we know how a kid or a loner got a shot off at the president. They wanted him to get that shot off. Maz said, Dalton, you said Harris can put a sentence together. I would say so. Try 20 sentences together while saying absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The sentences, yeah, by definition, they are sentences.
Mm-hmm.
Do they really make a whole lot of sense? Often, not at all.
Often they don't. Not incompetent. Come on, man. She did exactly what she was told to do. Let's stop pretending already. Texter referencing the Cheadle testimony in front of the House Oversight Committee yesterday. Martin said a lot of what Quinn Hillier said about Harris should be passed on to Trump. Trump's going to have to be careful with his remarks about Harris, or it could possibly hurt him.
I think he's going to be careful.
Pat says, as far as the infrastructure money, the reason it goes to blue states is because they send more tax money to the feds than Alabama does.
Yeah, I mean, the blue states are... they're populated.
John says Texas and Louisiana are red, and they received a bunch of that infrastructure money. Gardner, other than conservative media, how will liberal Americans know this info about Cheadle? Well, I hope they're watching the same things we're watching as far as these committee hearings.
But yeah.
I don't know.
But the Democrats are taking their shots at her, too, because, again, they feel... they don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8:59.
Tommy Tuberville, Senator, on with Jeff Poor just after 9 o'clock, coming up on the Jeff Poor Show.